Good afternoon, Eastern Washington. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of free Washington, Spokane Valley, brought to you once again by the committee to elect Matt Shea, Republican, and legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. And once again, it's not about right or left. It's about right and wrong. Looking forward to our guest today because he cuts right to the chase. But remember, this is the year we do the hard work to implement freedom because our hope is not in man, but in Jesus Christ. And we can't end in prayer. We must also move to action. And as Exodus 15:3 says, the Lord is a warrior. The Lord is his name. Are we warriors? Now, there is a tendency that I'm seeing recently for people to diminish things that are happening around us. For example, there was this gun confiscation order signed down in the U.S. Virgin Islands, and people are trying to diminish it all. Gun confiscation just isn't happening. It was just in the order. Wait a minute. The whole point of bringing attention to this was that gun confiscation was in an order. That was the whole point. And people are not realizing that diminishing this is actually, very candidly, a form of cowardice. Because what you're basically saying is, oh, we just don't have to worry about it because it's just not real yet. Wait a minute. No, you stop it before it gets real. If they weren't intending on ever using that provision of confiscating firearms, why put it in the order? Why put it there to begin with? Doesn't make any sense. And I've seen a lot of things on social media. Oh, this is just hype. No, wait a minute. It's not just hype. We should be upset that anywhere, any governor of any U.S. territory or state put in an order that the National Guard could confiscate ammunition and firearms. That's ridiculous. It's unconstitutional. It's our job to be upset about something that egregious, not to diminish and say, well, they're not really confiscating it. You don't know that for sure. It happened in Katrina. And some people say, well, no, it didn't really happen. But there were story upon story upon story. And I know people that actually went down there to help. And they confirm this stuff. So the idea that the military could confiscate firearms, that is an enormous deal. And I'm sick and tired of people that are trying to diminish something that big. That's cowardice. We need to stand up while we still have the opportunity to stand and say that's not right. They didn't have to do that in Texas. Florida governor did essentially the opposite. We need to hold those people accountable that are not abiding by the Constitution, and we shouldn't have to worry about this stuff. But the fact of the matter is there are people out there that don't understand the Constitution, that don't understand their duties as elected officials. We need to call them on it. And I hope the NRA does sue because apparently they were going to do that. But as Christians, if somebody put out an order that you had to worship another God other than the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, whose son is Jesus the Christ, oh, not a big deal because they're not really implementing it yet. Not a big deal. What? Who would ever say something like that? Well, at least it'd be a legitimate Christian. When somebody signals intent in an official government document, that is just as good as the action having happened. I want to say this again. When somebody signals intention in an official government document, it is just as dangerous, it is just as real as if what they signaled the intent to do had actually happened. You need to understand that. We all need to understand that and never, ever forget it. And that brings me now to the daily intelligence briefing on the international front. Once again, Kurdish independence vote coming up here on September 25th. Going to have a profound change in the Middle East and also now we have more troops headed back to Afghanistan. And I really It's troubling. It's very, very troubling. I mean, how long are we going to be at war? The U.S. soldiers and sailors and airmen and Marines, Coast Guard that serve need a definable objective. What are we going to do? What does victory mean? What does it look like? How can we measure it? And I'm concerned that we're getting caught again in a war with no definable goals. So I hope that those definable goals come out. I also hope that there's some constitutional debate about this and a declaration of war by Congress. It's not good. And that brings us to North Korea, because we have an actual threat from somebody who is threatening us directly. Just did their 6th nuclear test. Potentially more missile launches coming. Apparently there's a holiday on September 9th. So we need to keep watching what's happening there, because North Korea just can't continue launching missiles over Japan. The Japanese aren't going to stand for it. And what do? We let them continue to build a nuclear program that can ultimately detonate an electromagnetic pulse over the United States, and that's what they said they want to do. And there's some people that poo-poo the EMP threat, but you can go look it up for yourself online, Starfish Prime, and then also the Project K nuclear tests that were done in Russia. And the ones done in Russia are more extensive, and they're probably a better indicator of what would happen in EMP and the destruction that would be wrought in the electrical system, and particularly the boxes, the control boxes, and other electrical grid infrastructure. And the idea that EMPs are not something to be worried about, well, why would the North Koreans pursue it? Why did the Russians test about it so extensively? Also on the international front, Venezuela still continuing to descend into civil war. There are some more horrific stories coming out about people killing animals just to survive. And I reported on those horrific stories of cannibalism that had been coming out of Venezuela. It's just awful down there. And Maduro continues to try to cement his dictatorship, offering $5 million for Hurricane Harvey. Whatever. It's a joke down there right now, and that brings us to Cuba, which is kind of one of the only allies of Venezuela right there. The suspected attack on embassy personnel in Cuba, still not much coming out about it other than there are more people injured than they originally reported. And going to have to keep our eyes on that. Also on the national front. So Hurricane Harvey, 100,000 homes destroyed. The governor saying it could be up to $120 billion plus in damage. And there's an interesting thing that happened with Harvey. Harvey kind of parked over that part of Texas, and that's why there was 50 inches of rain. With Irma, which is now the strongest Atlantic hurricane on record, with Irma, apparently, you have the moving of the hurricane fast enough that it might not drop as much water, but that increases the storm surge. In other words, the surge of the ocean waves. And that's what they're really worried about in Florida. It's already hit the U.S. Virgin Islands. It's already hit Puerto Rico, and it's been absolutely devastating. There is over a million people in Puerto Rico now without power. There are some places that they're predicting in Florida that could be uninhabitable for months. That's literally their words. It came out today. It's on Drudge Report. You can check it out yourself. And then, on top of that, Puerto Rico is already bankrupt. So, I mean, this is a financial catastrophe for them. There's no way that, I mean, they're completely bankrupt now officially with this devastation. Now it's going to take a lot of money to help the folks in Puerto Rico. But also, and more interesting to me at least, there are two more hurricanes. One, Hurricane Katia, that formed right near apparently where Hurricane Harvey originally formed. And then Hurricane Jose, which formed near where Hurricane Irma originally formed, that are in Hurricane Jose now is up to a Category 3. But they don't expect that. They expect that to head more north. So a lot on the weather front that is occurring. Some people are wondering, has God's protective hand been taken off America? We're seeing another wildfire season that has broken the air quality records in the wrong direction. I've lived here my entire life. You know, my family's from this area, and I've never seen it this bad. So all of this to say, all these things are going on. Our hope is in Jesus Christ. It's not in man. But we also need to take steps to be prepared. These things are happening at quite an alarming rate, literally a convergence of storms, if you will. So I think that, you know, if this doesn't get you off the couch to prepare, I don't know what will. And one of the cautionary tales out of Florida is that they are running low on fuel for just people trying to get out. And most of the people that left early enough got out okay, and the traffic is just horrible right now with people trying to evacuate. So it's better to be safe than sorry and make the determination to get out earlier if you can. Some people actually are heading from Florida all the way up to Washington State. I know that a friend of mine was telling me that. And anyway, there people are getting out. But be prepared. That's the bottom line out of all this, all the lessons. Just be prepared. Get some extra food. Get some things right now when there's no disaster looming. Just go down and stock up on some extra food. Stock up. Make sure you got some water. Make sure you have medical supplies. Make sure you got some extra gas. Get some fuel stabilizer so that gas will last longer. Just really simple stuff, practical stuff that we're seeing other people that are not prepared having to deal with. It looks like it's going to be devastating down there in Florida, and it may go up the East Coast. You don't know. And it was reported actually earlier yesterday, there are two nuclear plants potentially in the path of Irma as well. So just pray for the folks down there. Get prepared yourself. Also on the national front, Southern Poverty Law Center being sued. Finally. Nobody really takes them seriously anymore. But also, and interestingly, they've moved millions offshore, and apparently there may be as much as $69 million hidden overseas by the Southern Poverty Law Center. That's very odd behavior. So I'm going to continue looking into this and verify some of these numbers. The bottom line is that the Southern Poverty Law Center is starting to reap a little bit of what it has sown over the years. And the organization needs to go away. It's not about poverty, and clearly it's not about the law, but it has been used to smear the names of a lot of good people. And some folks are finally saying enough is enough. Also on the national front, and this just in right before the broadcast, Equifax, the credit reporting agency, hacked 143 million people potentially exposed. This is a breaking story, so we'll get more as it comes in. But that could have some pretty wide-ranging ramifications. Also, on the regional front, and this is an interesting thing, this article just came to me today, actually, but talks about a group called Redneck Revolt. Remember that name, Redneck Revolt. Redneck Revolt is associated with Antifa, and also is associated with leftists who are now training and arming themselves. Interestingly enough, North Idaho now has a Redneck Revolt Facebook page. And they potentially have a group in North Idaho that you'd look at it and people would think redneck revolt. Well, that's, wait a minute, those can't be leftists. Well, they are. So it's important to understand that these people are out there and they use names like that that sound maybe the exact opposite of what they really are. But Redneck Revolt in North Idaho is a story we're going to continue covering and expose the left on this. One of the things that they did on the East Coast is they would show up to rallies with guns. Now, some of these guns ended up not being actual guns, but being airsoft guns. And they did so, I believe, to make it easier for local elected officials who align with the leftist viewpoint to say, wait, we're going to ban guns. And oh, by the way, that includes the left because these other guys from the left showed up at these rallies. So understand the strategy behind some of this and get yourself educated on who these groups are because they are in our own backyard now. Again, Redneck Revolt. Also on the regional front, and this is a really, this made me happy when I saw this. It was a little bit unexpected. Joe Robertson, the Navy veteran who was put in prison for having a pond on his property. Many of you remember us talking about this story here a year ago, was released from prison. The story coming to us from Readout News. He looks like a very happy man. And one of the pictures, and I posted this up on Facebook, he's got a Lavoie Finicum hat as well on. So Joe Robertson finally released. I hope Donald Trump looks at pardoning the folks down in the Bunkerville trials. Out of control government should be checked in. Joe Robertson did nothing more than put a pond on his property. That's all he did, and he ended up in jail. It should never happen that way. And I hope Donald Trump puts a check on this out-of-control bureaucracy in America. Also on the regional front, Washington State, as if you cannot tell, a statewide state of emergency because of the wildfires. And I looked at the wildfire map, and it does not look like it's going to be put out anytime soon. And I hope the weather changes because this is, like I said, the worst I've ever seen it. But again, highlighting the fact that our forest management policies have completely failed. When you don't log the forests and maintain them with selective cutting, and reduce the fuel load, this is what happens. I don't know how many years in a row this is going to have to happen, but, you know, here we are again. And, you know, all these environmentalists who say, oh, we want clean air. We want less CO2 emissions. Really? If you did, then you would support proper forest management. Because the greatest single contributor to CO2 release and dirty air is wildfires. 92 million tons of CO2 released in Washington State. 24 million of it. And this is the previous wildfire. I don't even know what the numbers are going to be this time. But 24 million of it was from wildfires. So the single greatest thing you could do to help the environment, to clean up the air, to reduce CO2 emissions, is to manage your forest properly. That's it. Period. And that means you're going to have to put some roads in, so people can access the backcountry to stop some of these forest fires. I don't know why we have to have this debate constantly, but that's the bottom line. Also on the regional front, and I posted this up online, you're going to want to check this out. I posted up there a great primary source listing of all George Soros organizations, and you can keep this listing to use and educate people and spread it far and wide. And it comes to us from a couple sources, but the primary source, and this is, there are groups out there right now that are watchdogs. Trevor Loudon has done a terrific job exposing the left. There are also organizations out there that have really literally put together dossiers to show the dots connecting between not just people, but groups on the left, and the probably the foremost organization that's doing that is called discoverthenetworks.org, discoverthenetworks.org. And it has all of these organizations listed. Anyway, the bottom line is that this is on the Facebook page. Check it out for yourself. Educate people on it. And help. Help people understand that this is not some one-off, not some just, oh, people are just not educated enough. No, this is an intentional plan with organizations that are very well-funded and connected by George Soros. All right, on the local front, Spokane Valley update. Well, the We Believe We Vote guide has come out, and as expected, the opponents of the existing city council in Spokane Valley are progressives, and their scores from We Believe We Vote reflect that. So if you want to keep Spokane Valley conservative, if you want to keep it the capital of free Washington, the choice is pretty clear. But check out the We Believe We Vote guide online. Also on the local front, Rob Chase, the number one pick for PCOs, for county commissioner, still needs your help. If you get a chance, email Al French at afrench@spokanecounty.org or Josh Kearns at jkearns@spokanecounty.org and let him know that you want Rob Chase. He's a good man. He understands freedom. He understands liberty. He wouldn't put out an order that required the confiscation of guns. The one order that you would never use, of course, but for your safety, just in case. But we'd never use it. Anyway, Rob Chase is a good man that way, that he understands the Constitution and has a backbone. So if you get a chance, just take a few minutes and shoot an email. Also on the local front, the Democrat Party statewide has been rocked by allegations of a sexual assault that occurred. Also, the WSU student leader caught up in a sting operation. Now, and this is after they had been hammered for PDC violations, including 208 alleged counts of forgery. Now it appears the Empire Strikes Back, and a former attorney general, and you're probably only going to hear this on Patriot Radio, but a former attorney general, former AG, okay, somebody that worked in the AG's office, okay, left the AG's office apparently because he couldn't stand suing Democrats, and now in a private law firm is now filing rafts of PDC complaints against Republicans. And we're seeing this happen right now. So it looks like the war is officially on, and we're seeing dozens of people hit with these PDC complaints, some of which are just ridiculous. So that's what happens when people are held accountable. They will lash out. And when they have some problems in their own backyard, they will lash out. I want to say something, too. I mean, it's our job. This is not about party. This is about right and wrong. It's our job to police our own side, our own folks. You know, and if you have somebody that, you know, has potentially committed crimes, or you have people that are lacking integrity, then if you don't deal with it, then you almost become an enabler. And you understand something with the left, that's what they count on. They count on us just not holding anyone accountable. And we can't fall into the trap of holding other people accountable, but not our own folks accountable. And it's just an important lesson, I think, that we all need to take to heart. And that is The Briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you once again to everybody that has been praying for us. And make sure you go to Facebook.com/Patriot Radio US. Like the page, share it with your friends and family. And if you want to donate, please feel free to go to VoteShea.com. Help keep us on the air. Had a lot of good and positive feedback recently. And just every once in a while, get on the messenger and just shoot me, you know, your thoughts about maybe who we should have on the show. Shoot me your thoughts on questions that should be asked and kind of what you think about everything. I know we're reaching across the world now, especially with the podcast, and I just I really thank everybody out there for the support. Because without you, we could not make this possible. And we're going to continue the fight for freedom and liberty here in this great part of the country. Well, it's my pleasure to introduce you to Dr. Dave Janda. And Dr. Janda has an enormous, literally, it's very, very long curriculum vitae. But what you need to know is that he is a very well-known, very well-respected doctor. He has also a three-hour radio show, Operation Freedom. Thank you very much for joining me on Patriot Radio today. It's really a pleasure to have you finally on.
Matt, thanks for having me aboard. I truly appreciate your interest in what we're trying to do in healthcare policy.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and how you got involved with everything to the point you're now on a radio show and helping educate folks across the country about freedom.
Well, thank you so very much, Matt. So, as you mentioned, I am a physician, actually a recently retired physician as of January of this year. I went to college at Bucknell University in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania, double majored chemistry and economics, ended up going to medical school at Northwestern University in Chicago, where I obtained my MD degree. I then went to the University of Michigan and completed a five-year residency in orthopedic surgery. And then I did a fellowship in shoulder reconstructive surgery and sports medicine in London, Ontario, at the great university of the University of Western Ontario, under the direction of Dr. Richard Hawkins, who at the time was the guru, if you will, in the world in shoulder reconstructive surgery and sports medicine. I then came back to Ann Arbor and joined a seven-member orthopedic group, and I was with that group for 27 years until my retirement on January 1st of 2017. In addition to my clinical work as an orthopedic surgeon, I founded a research organization entitled the Institute for Preventative Sports Medicine. And it was at the time when I founded it in 1989, it was the only organization of its kind in the world that solely focused on prevention. And just to give you your listeners a little background in prevention, you know, it is the most under-recognized, if you will, approach to healthcare reform, to cutting costs. It seems simplistic. Prevent people from getting injured, prevent people from getting diseases, and you not only have a healthier society, but you also have a society that spends less on healthcare-related expenses. And let me give you an example. Some research that I had started at the University of Michigan and then carried over to the Institute, well, we looked at a particular injury pattern that was occurring in sports. And we ran a series of studies over multiple years, and we published our findings in the Journal of the American Medical Association. And what we found was that we could prevent 96% of the injuries occurring in a particular sport and save 99% of the associated healthcare costs. Well, what interesting is we spent $1,000 on that series of studies. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention got in touch with me and said, hey, send us all your research agenda, your published studies, your data, and we want to run it through our system and determine what this means for our country nationally. And then they published a report based on our studies that showed that if every community did what we told them to do on this one injury pattern, it would prevent 1.7 million people a year from going to the hospital or the doctor and save $2 billion in healthcare costs. And we spent $1,000 once. And that's what we really talk about the power of prevention. Well, at the time, Ronald Reagan was president when these studies started to hit. And one day I got a call from the White House, and they said, you know, Dr. Janda, your approach is very unique. Would you be interested in working with the president on health care policy? And this is toward the end of his term in 88. So I went to, I said, of course, and I went to Washington. I worked with C. Everett Koop, who was then Surgeon General, Jack Kemp, who was a congressman at the time but was working on a lot of domestic policy issues for President Reagan. And we started working on health care policy. Here's a frustrating thing, Matt. What we were working on in 1988 is now being brought to the forefront as something new and innovative as a means of healthcare cost containment. By that I mean, back then we were talking about the utilization of a more free market of approach, utilizing health savings accounts, utilizing direct primary care through primary care physicians to cut costs, to make people safer, healthier, institute wellness and prevention initiatives, having insurance companies rather than collude, compete, and sell insurance across state lines. We talked about high-risk pools for folks that were uninsured that had significant medical issues. All these issues that we talked about, tort reform, how to have arbitration boards to cut down on the number of litigation that was occurring, but also if there was a mistake made, that the money go to the person that was harmed as opposed to a bunch of attorneys, if you will, and have the person who was harmed get very little. These are the things we were focusing on. And Reagan was like, yeah, I don't care who I get mad. I don't care if I get the insurance companies mad. I don't care if I get the pharmaceutical companies mad. I don't care if I get the AMA mad. Let's just do what's right for folks, which was very refreshing. Unfortunately, when Reagan left office and Bush 1 came in, we still tried to push this approach. And here's where I learned a very valuable lesson. This is back in 1989. There's really no difference between what I experienced with the Republicans and Democrats, because when we pushed this agenda with the Bush 1 administration, they said, hey, you know how much support we get from the insurance industry and pharmaceutical industry? No, we're not. This goes on the back burner. Then when Clinton came into power, we were asked to talk to them about the same approach, and we did, and we got the same answer. And then when Bush 2 came in, we were asked again, and same answer. Now, Obama never brought us in the room because he had no interest in a free market approach. But the bottom line is what I found back then, and if you carried on through multiple administrations, is that attitude, philosophy of Ronald Reagan, empower people, not big business, empower people. That went by the wayside, as I experienced with Bush 1, Clinton, Bush 2, and Obama. If you really dissect Obamacare, that was essentially written by the insurance industry. That is, you know, it is a direct, if you will, collusion between big government and big business. And the ultimate losers when that occurs is every American. So I ended up getting involved in healthcare policy through my affiliation, if you will, and my research as it relates to prevention and healthcare cost containment, and have been working on healthcare policy since 88. Now, as I worked in healthcare policy with the Surgeon General, and then I would be asked to consult with the Department of Health and Human Services, and then the Treasury Department had some health-related issue questions. I would network with them and meet folks in the Secret Service, and then they'd refer me to folks in the Justice Department to help with them when they were having health-related issues, not health policy-related issues. And through that, I met folks in the FBI, and from that, I met folks in the Defense Department, and from that, I met folks in the intelligence agencies. And I bring all that up because some folks came to me, the management of WAM Talk 1600 in Ann Arbor, and I had done hundreds and hundreds of interviews over the years. And as you know, when you're doing a radio show, folks approach you about doing a show, but then they say, we're going to control content.
Yeah.
I was like, no, I want to control content. And when WAM Talk 1600 came to me and said, we'd like you to do a show, I said, yeah, but here's the problem, and nobody goes along with this, is I want to control content. And the woman who owns the radio station, Linda Hughes, who I believe is the only woman radio station owner in the country, looked at me. She goes, oh, that's fine, no problem. And in October of 2010 is when I had my first broadcast, and it's every Sunday from 2 to 5. The folks can stream it on my website, Dave Janda, D-A-V-E, Janda, J-A-N-D-A.com. And the podcasts are free. They're always available afterwards. But what I did to make this a unique type of show, I brought all my contacts over 30 years' time to that show. So, for example, I have whistleblowers that I have known for years that won't go on the lamestream fake media, but they come on my show, and they deliver information that the fake media will never touch. I have folks from the intelligence agencies, folks from the DEA. A good friend of mine I have featured on as a regular basis, Bob Mazur. He was a DEA agent who went undercover and brought down Pablo Escobar, the big drug kingpin warlord. Bob, they actually made a movie about him called The Infiltrator. So, I mean, these are the, you know, this week I have a good friend of mine, General Paul Vallely, who I truly believe, based on the information I know, he helped prevent World War III in the Middle East this past year when he, on a clandestine mission, went and met with Putin's people to calm things down, and then what helped arrange at the G20 summit, the meeting between Putin and Trump, which has now led to a ceasefire that's been in place for several months. So these are the type of folks I bring, and it all stems back to going back and working with Reagan back in 88.
Well, you are an expert on Obamacare, and I kind of want to go into that very quickly because, I mean, today people don't understand that there is literally a group of people that try to protect their own interests in a global sense, that try to advance an agenda that will go in one direction. And Obamacare was honestly part of that because you can control such a huge amount of the economy. Tell me what you think, A, about Trump's decision to apparently abandon anything remotely close to a debt ceiling, and also the implications of Obamacare on our economy, and who really is behind this and where they want to go with it.
So here's my experience with Obamacare. Because of my work over the years in the White House, I not only got to know people that lived in the White House, but people that worked in the White House. And early in the Obama administration, in the first couple weeks, I started getting calls from people in D.C. saying, "Hey, Dave, something's going on in healthcare policy that they're trying to hide because they're bringing these healthcare policy people in and they're working on something. So keep your antenna up. They're going to try to pull a fast one, and please watch very closely." So the first thing, if you remember, they put out there under the Obama administration was the stimulus bill. And when that bill got downloaded to Congressional Budget Office about 2 o'clock in the morning, I woke up and had my alarm set. I downloaded it. My wife said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "From all my contacts, they tell me that they're going to try something." And I had been told before Obama was inaugurated that the first thing they're going to go after is health care. Because if they can control people's health care, and you alluded to this, Matt, if they can control your health care, they can control every aspect of every person's life, and they can control every business. These folks are control freaks, okay? And I understand something. My belief is whether you look at the Bushes or the Clintons or Obama, they're all puppets. They're puppets of the globalist system. The globalists are freaks about getting control, power, and money. They don't care about national borders. They don't count sovereignty. They don't care about the United States of America. They don't care about the American citizens. They don't care about the world population. They care about themselves, their power, their control. And in fact, I had been in meetings in Washington over the years where all of us that are not part of this elite structure are referred as, quote, useless eaters, end quote. So I had been tipped off that the globalists, with their puppet Obama, were going to come after the healthcare delivery system to get better control, easier control of the population. Because if they can control your healthcare, they can control how you live, and they can control how you die. And I know that sounds sinister, but it's actually very true. So as I downloaded the stimulus bill, I was about 400 pages into it, and there it was. The rationing boards and the enforcement boards. Here's what people need to know that 99% of the population still does not know, because the media will never present this, the fake media, is Obamacare was two parts. The first part was hidden in the stimulus bill. That's where all the rationing boards and the enforcement boards were. Sarah Palin got a lot of grief for talking about death panels. Sarah Palin was right, but the death panels, the rationing boards, were actually hidden in the stimulus bill, which was passed in February of 2009. The second part of Obamacare was that health care bill that got passed in the dead of night in March of 2010. right? So it was two parts. But the reason why I opposed Obamacare is when I looked at that stimulus bill, there were rationing boards and the enforcement boards. Now, my experience, when Hillary Care was being pushed out, Senator Dole had gotten in touch with myself and another individual and said, hey, look at Hillary Care for us and tell us what's right about it and what's wrong. It was a little bit right, but there was a whole lot wrong. And the reason why it was wrong is because it was based on the most unethical and inhumane means of cutting health care costs, and that's the rationing and denying of care by bureaucrats that had no functional medical knowledge. So when I came across the stimulus bill by Obama in February 2009, the same boards that were in Hillary Care I found were in Obamacare but hidden in the stimulus bill.
So is it? Well, is it ultimately, I mean, they're going to use this stuff, obviously, to control people. That's the whole point. You mentioned it twice.
Yeah.
But do they really want to go? I mean, it seems like this was set up to fail. Do they really want to go to a single-payer system? I mean, is that ultimately the goal here? I mean, what is the end product of this look like? Because we're kind of in a part right now. We're not to what they finally want to get to.
Right. So when you get to the second part of Obamacare, that's where it became painfully obvious that this would not increase the availability to care, the access to care, the affordability of care, or the quality of care. In fact, when you read that second part of Obamacare, it was evident that costs would go up, availability and access would go down, and quality of care would go down. And it became painfully obvious from a financial standpoint that it was built to fail. It was built to fail so that it would usher in a single-payer system. Now, why would the insurance companies go along with that? Well, first of all, if you look at the insurance company profits, if you look at the insurance company stock prices, go back and go through a search engine, DuckDuckGo or whatever you want, Google, whatever you want, but look at the stock prices of the major insurance companies in February 2009, when the stimulus bill was put forward, and their prices now, okay? They're up 500, 600%. And everybody has this delusion that the insurance companies, oh, they don't like Obamacare. Really? Their product was mandated. They were given license to increase price at an escalating level on a yearly basis. They got more and more control. And in fact, if their payouts got to be too much, there were built in for the government taxpayers, if you will, to refinance them. In fact, one of the ways that Trump really wants to end Obamacare tomorrow is that and Jerry Corsi, who was with WorldNet Daily, now he's with InfoWars, determined this, and he's absolutely correct because I've researched it myself. Jerry Corsi shows that dividends that were supposed to go into the national treasury from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, you know, the mortgage company,
yeah,
were actually funneled into Obamacare and into the insurance company's pockets to keep it going until after the 2016 election. You see, the plan was Obamacare to keep going until after the election. When Hillary stepped in, as it started to fall apart, she would say, oh, well, you know what? What we need to go to the next step, and that's a single-payer system. And it was built to fail. It was built to fail. So it's about control, and the single most effective way of getting control is for them to run the whole show. So the insurance companies bought into it because, one, they helped write it because, look at their profit margins have gone through the roof over the last 7-8 years. But in addition, I believe there was a deal cut with the insurance company's executives that said, look, this is built to fail. You know, you're going to make a ton of money. You're going to make billions and billions of dollars. But as it fails, what we'll do is we'll step in, and what we're going to do is we're going to have you guys split up the country. Aetna, you get the West Coast. United Healthcare, you get the Midwest. Blue Cross Blue Shield, you get the East Coast. They split up the country, and they said, here's what's going to happen. We're going to pay you to administer the national health care program in your respective regions. And this way, you're never on the hook to paying anything out. They'll come all come through the government, but you're going to get huge fees to administer it. That's why they signed on.
Just, you know, that kind of is depressing listening to it. But the bottom line is that America is resilient. What can we do? What does right look like? And I, you know, there's a hospital in Oklahoma that I believe is a model for the country with, you know, basically a menu and all cash payments and has one of the lowest reinfection rates, most happy employees, all of those things, all the metrics we would look for. What do you think right looks like, and how can we actually get there? Because it seems like we're not just fighting one political party.
No, right.
We're fighting everybody.
Right. You're right. We're fighting both parties, and here's why. Because if you look at Ryan Care was essentially baby Obamacare. It was Obamacare light. If that would have passed, it would have been a disaster. Okay, so the first thing is Obamacare. This is what every one of your listeners should do, and they should contact their congressmen, their senators, everybody, and say, listen, if you don't do this, I am actively going to pursue your removal from office. I am actively going to back your opponent. I'm going to get my friends and families to do it. I'm going to support financially that individual, because if you can't get this done, then you're gone. Okay? So what do they tell me need to do? One, repeal Obamacare, period. It is a ration-based system. It is evil. It is based on the most unethical and inhumane means of cutting costs, rationed care. It has all these entities, huge number of entities. I believe 79 new federal agencies were created under Obamacare. It's nuts. We don't need more administration. We need less. So number one, get rid of Obamacare completely. That's the first step. Now, many people say, well, you get rid of Obamacare, it's going to take months or years to replace that. No, it's not. There's an insurance individual who's by far not an elitist. His name is David Powell. He's based in Kansas. David Powell has been in the insurance industry for years, but he's a renegade. He's not about insurance companies ripping off the public and maximizing and gouging people. What he's about is providing a product that is there for people in their time of need if they have illness or disease. According to David, and I've gone through his information with a toothpick, and it's outstanding, he believes repealing Obamacare, and if you can get a replacement in there, not run by government, but let free market forces in, and bringing programs that the insurance companies that he has on his shelf ready to implement could be implemented within 48 hours. 48 hours. Okay? So when everybody's telling you, these politicians, oh, well, if we repeal Obamacare, well, there's not going to be anything there for months, if not years. Wrong. 48 hours. And programs that focus on incentivizing and empowering people, not empowering government, not empowering insurance companies, empowering people. Health savings accounts, direct primary care. Insurance companies must sell insurance across state lines to compete as opposed to collude. Initiation of prevention and wellness initiatives. The pre-existing high-risk pools. You know, before Obamacare, there were 35 states that had high-risk pools. There were no problems with people with pre-existing conditions in those 35 states. The problem was there were 15 states that didn't have them. Well, look, all we had to do was get these other 15 states to put them in place, and the pre-existing condition problem goes completely out the window. You see, if we did all – see, here's the thing that just infuriates me. If we implemented what I just talked about, health savings accounts, direct primary care, insurance companies competing across state lines rather than colluding, high-risk pools for the pre-existing condition issues, initiation of prevention and wellness initiatives. That, we figured it out. We would cut every American's health care insurance premium by over 75% in 48 hours.
Wow.
And they would have a plan that increased the availability and access to care, was much more affordable, and increase the quality of care. Now, folks are going to say, well, wait a minute, Dave. What about those that are poor and indigent on Medicaid? Well, we've shown this when we suggested this to folks in a number of different states, but Indiana implemented it. And what they did is they took people on Medicaid and they provided them with health savings accounts. Matt, healthcare costs plummeted, and people were healthier. If you look at the Medicaid population across the country, it's harming people. There are four peer-reviewed studies that show that people on Medicaid in our country, because it's a ration-based system run by the government, people on Medicaid have poorer health outcomes and have a higher propensity to die than people that have no health insurance at all.
That is stunning. That is stunning. Every elected official in America should know that.
You better believe it. I mean, and if you want to know what a national health care system is going to look like in our country, look at the VA.
Yeah.
And I can tell you because in my training, I had to work in several VA hospitals. In Chicago, I was at Northwestern for medical school, and in my internship and residency in Ann Arbor at their VA hospital. Let me tell you something. The vets are not taken care of properly at a VA hospital because the VA hospital system is based on the rationing and denying of care as a means of cutting costs, which is the playbook model of Hillary Care and Obamacare and their big brother, the British healthcare delivery system.
It's exactly right. Well, we have only a couple minutes left, so if you could let the listeners know where they can go to listen to your show and also maybe contact you as well.
Sure. So we have a new and improved website, DaveJanda.com. So all the shows are there. They can stream the show live. It's every Sunday, 2 to 5 Eastern, a live show. They can call in if they wish. On the website, I have a YouTube channel that's also, you can get it through DaveJanda.com. We have all the podcasts. If they want to listen all the way back to October 2010, they're all there free for folks. And if they want to contact me, my email is right there, dave@davejanda.com. They can get in touch with me. We have the YouTube channel. We have the all the podcasts. We have the live streaming show. And we also have some publications I've written on healthcare policy in layman's terms, not something that folks will go, oh, you know, this is just too, you know,
right,
too esoteric. No. And in fact, I wrote an article entitled, after I was a keynote speaker at a congressional dinner back in 2010, the one word to describe Obamacare. And that one word, Matt, was fascist.
By the true meaning of that word, a lot of people don't know what that word means, but by the true meaning of that word, you're absolutely right. In 1 minute, we got 1 minute left. If you could finish your final thoughts, but also address real quick your thoughts on Trump and the debt ceiling.
So my thoughts on Trump and the debt ceiling, look, I'm a free market guy, and I believe that I was very unhappy with him saying that there is, in fact, today it was, there is going to be no debt ceiling. Not just we're going to raise
right.
it, we're going to put it off till there is no debt ceiling. I think that's a recipe for disaster. I frankly, if you listen to the financial people that come on my show, Big Shooters, I honestly believe we're headed for an economic financial hurricane, more than Irma and Harvey put together. And I'm very concerned that there's going to have to be a reset of our entire financial system. And when that happens, I believe millions of people are going to be in harm's way.
I couldn't agree with you more. We need to take right now as an opportunity to get our own financial houses in order and prepare as well. Dr. Dave Janda, thank you very much for joining me on Patriot Radio. We will have you on again. I really appreciate your perspective and love with what you're doing with the show Operation Freedom.
Well, thanks for all your efforts, Matt. I really appreciate it.
All right. Take care. God bless. All right, Dr. Dave Janda. And if you want to, I'm going to post it up here on Facebook really quick for everybody. You can go check out his Operation Freedom. I love that name. I love that whole idea. Radio show. It's a 3-hour radio show where he dissects everything that's going on in current events. Has people like General Paul Vallely on, which we've had on Patriot Radio before as well. And Dr. Janda also is a very, very distinguished orthopedic surgeon and obviously a very clear expert on Obamacare. And check him out because there's a lot of information you are not going to see in the lamestream media on his show. You're not going to get it out of the Socialist Review or the Inslander. You're going to find it on his show as well. And I really want to highlight one thing before I end today, and that is, again, what you're hearing in almost all of these people talking that are experts, things are not right. Even though, you know, Trump helped turn the ship a little bit, things are not right. We have economic indicators that are facing in the wrong direction. We have a hurricane that hit Texas of epic proportions, another one about to hit Florida of epic proportions. We have an epic wildfire here in the western United States, wildfires, Montana, Idaho, Oregon, Washington, Northern California. All of these things can get people on edge, get people scared. But the common theme throughout all of this is our hope is not in man. Our hope is in Jesus Christ. And we need to take the opportunities we've been given by him to prepare, to be able to help and love our neighbors if something does go wrong. There was a great story about spontaneous order out of Texas where people helped each other and helped get everything back going again to help other people. That is what we need to be prepared to do. We don't need to hide our heads in the sand. We need to look at what's going on around us. We need to realize that things the way they are headed are not sustainable. They're not tenable. And we need to take measures. And that, honestly, takes the fear out of everything. If you're prepared and you're looking at it very logically and objectively, it takes the fear out of everything. And more importantly, it turns the word love into action. This is Matt Shea. Thank you very much for joining me on Patriot Radio today. May God bless all of you, and may he make this generation truly the greatest one.